This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Before we begin today's story, make sure you hit the like button, subscribe to my channel if you want to see more from me, and you can always join my Patreon. We have a big goal there. I will talk about that at the end of the video. I have got a wild one for you today. This story involves glamorous people, the world's second largest Batman memorabilia collection, porn stars, strippers, a boob job that even the woman getting the surgery didn't know she was getting, a sex game that turned into a robbery, and even voodoo. But before we get into all of that, there's something almost as strange linked to this story. There has been something very unusual happening in Las Vegas for years now, something you never see in Las Vegas. Construction on a new mega resort, hotel, casino, began in February of 2007, and it has never been finished. Now, you're like, big deal. That happens sometimes. Businesses fall apart. Buildings don't get finished. Not in Las Vegas, my friends. I go to Vegas at least once a month. I lived there for years. And even when I only go once a month, I can go one time. And then the next time I go back the next month, there's a new building. Or there's a building that was there on my last visit that is now demolished. Vegas does not mess around with constructions. Even the roads are always under construction. So it's not just unusual, but kind of disturbing when a large company comes in and starts a new mega resort and it sits not for months, but for a decade and a half. The Fontainebleau Hotel Casino is now scheduled to open in December of this year. The property has been sold over and over, with Steve Witkoff securing a $2.2 billion loan to finish the project. We will see how it goes. Something tells me this property may be cursed, and I'll be keeping an eye on it. But with this new mega resort opening that most of you will likely see when you visit Vegas, I wanted to cover an even more scandalous story that involves the Fontainebleau, the original one in Miami. This is a very wild story, and one I'm a little surprised has been somewhat forgotten, because it has everything we love in a true crime story. The people in the story are so unusual that I find it particularly interesting, and I think you will too. This is the story of the murders of Bernice Novak and Ben Novak Jr., the story of the Fontainebleau murders. I'm your host, Stacey Lee. Let's get into it. ...1954. One of the most magnificent and opulent hotels in the world at the time, the Fontainebleau Miami opened. Hotelier Ben Novak hired architect Morris Lapidus to build the hotel, and when it opened, it was the largest and most luxurious hotel in Florida. It sits on the oceanfront in the heart of Millionaire's Row and is probably the most well-known and iconic hotel in the area. When you see anything Miami, you see the Fontainebleau. The lobby is iconic and features the very famous Stairway to Nowhere. This is what it looked like then, and this is what it looks like now. The hotel thrived through the 1950s and the 1960s. Every celebrity stayed there. The hotel has starred in films like Goldfinger, Scarface, The Bodyguard. This old girl is an icon, but it is not without its issues. In 1977, the Fontainebleau had to file for bankruptcy, and the Novaks lost the property. It was purchased by Stephen Muss. When the hotel went bankrupt, the Novaks simply moved on. They were rich beyond most of our imaginings and well protected by corporate laws, so their lives did not change much when they lost the hotel. Ben was married to Bernice Novak, a former model for Coca-Cola ads and for painter Salvador Dali. She was his second wife. Ben and Bernice had a son, born to them on January 19, 1956. They named him Ben Jr., and he went by Benji. As you can imagine, Benji lived a charmed life as a child growing up in one of the world's most luxurious hotels. He met movie stars and presidents, and he was very much pampered and well taken care of, to say the least. Benji was not well liked, even as a child. As one associate put it, he was very simply a brat. Benji was known to fire maids and bellhops when he was 9 years old. He lorded around the hotel and engaged in very bad behavior, and even the people closest to the Novaks disliked Benji. I mean, who wouldn't dislike a kid like that? I'm sorry, but he sounds awful. Firing staff members as a kid, that's going to be a no for me. After 14 years of marriage, Ben and Bernice divorced in 1966. Bernice moved to Fort Lauderdale, where she lived a very quiet but glamorous life, surrounded by oil paintings and diamonds and a piano used by Frank Sinatra. She lived there for the next 40 years until... we'll get into it. Ben Novak Sr. went on to different projects, and in April of 1985, he died of a heart attack. Benji grew up and became a very successful businessman in his own right. He managed conventions, corporate events that were held in Florida, and a lot of it was a cash business. Benji was not well liked, even as a corporate manager and convention specialist. He was a very spoiled child who grew up to be a very spoiled man. He was known to throw his father's name around. He was known to treat people poorly, and he had a lot of enemies. He had a very big ego, and he was very arrogant. And he had eccentricities is probably not a strong enough word. He was odd. He was a strange man. Let's talk a little about his odd behavior so you get a feel for who he was. Benji had the second largest Batman collection in the world. Now, a lot of people collect comic book products, but Benji was obsessed. He competed with other collectors and really enjoyed stomping on them when it came to bidding on an item at auction or winning an item at auction. He was never a gracious winner. He was all about that cutthroat aspect of collecting, and he never really seemed to get much joy out of winning, only out of making sure that he beat the other guy. And there is a difference. Benji even owned an actual Batmobile. This Batmobile here. He was the consummate collector, and he had to have absolutely every single piece of Batman memorabilia or promotional product ever made. Benji also had an obsession with sex workers. He would hire sex workers almost exclusively to stay at his house, and when he wasn't at home, he was at a strip club. Now, Benji is a really goofy looking guy. I tried to find information on whether or not that's a wig that he wears, but I think it was just the 80s. This look was never cool in the 80s, I can promise you that, but Benji was a weird guy, and he looked kind of weird. Benji was in one of his favorite strip clubs one night when he met a stripper with a very unusual name. Well, I mean, a lot of them have unusual names, but this woman's name was Narcy, like Darcy, but with an N. Ben and Narcy began seeing each other outside of the strip club, and in 1991, they were married. The marriage was very rocky, always stormy, and most in the know say very, very unconventional. I don't like getting into all this stuff because it's weird for me to talk about. It makes me uncomfortable, but they were very, very kinky. Lots of different people coming in and out of the bedroom, lots of unusual activity, and people close to Ben and Narcy said there was so much going on that only the two of them truly understood the relationship. So this was not just unconventional, but kind of strange. So Ben Novak Sr. has died. Bernice is living in Fort Lauderdale, and Benji is in his early 50s, living this wild life. People had mainly forgotten about the family that once owned the most luxurious hotel in that part of America. And then a very disturbing string of events would bring it all crashing down. April 5th, 2009. The sun was setting on another day in Bernice Novak's beautiful life. She spent her days lunching with friends, going to charity events, and living at home surrounded by beautiful things, wearing beautiful clothes, and spending time with fabulous people. As the sun went down on this night, Bernice realized that she had left her car in the driveway earlier in the day. She decided she was going to go out and pull it into the garage. She walked outside, unlocked the car door, and got in the driver's seat to start the car. But as she did so, a man who had been hiding behind garbage cans in her driveway stepped out and snuck up on Bernice. This is the man who was there that night. His name is Alejandro Garcia. He crept from his hiding place and appeared behind Bernice, who looked up at the man and began screaming. But before Bernice could take a second breath, the man hit her so hard that she stopped. Alejandro then hit Bernice two or three more times. He turned and walked away, seeing Bernice for the last time in her car. He did not kill her. Why? Because that's not what he was told to do. These are the photos of Bernice's car interior. As you can see, she was bleeding profusely from the head, but she was not dead. Bernice then stumbled into her house. She had been struck with a 14-inch wrench, heavy enough and hard enough to cause massive damage. You can see that Bernice made it to her kitchen, most likely looking for a telephone, but she was more than dazed. She was dying. She then stumbled down the hallway and into her bathroom. She may have felt that she was going to vomit because she knelt over the toilet for some period of time, all the while continuing to lose blood. Bernice then stumbled back out to the garage where she collapsed and died. Like I said, Alejandro had not been sent to kill Bernice. He had been sent to beat her up and was told specifically to hit her in the teeth. He had been paid $1,000 for the attack, but it had been too much for the older woman to recover from. Bernice Novak was dead at 87 years old. She was found hours later and the police were called. As they went through the house, they traced the blood and came to a conclusion, an erroneous conclusion, that Bernice Novak had slipped and hit her head. Not realizing what she was doing or how badly she was injured, she wandered around in the house in a daze, finally collapsing and dying in the garage. Now, do I personally think the police should have investigated this more thoroughly? I do. In order to rule out a strike to the head, you should have to find the spot where you believe the head was injured. You need to line up the injury with the object you believe caused it, if it's an accident. Now, that said, do you realize how many people die each year from falling and hitting their heads and then wandering around bleeding before they die? That's exactly what happened to Bob Saget not long ago. It's estimated that 70,000 people die from exactly that. And that's just in the United States. Falling and hitting your head, especially when you're over 60, is a major cause of death in the US. So yes, I can understand why the police thought this might have happened, but I feel like before ruling out foul play, you have to find the point of impact. Or at least try to. You have to ensure that that's what actually happened, and the police even admit they didn't do that in this case. So Bernice Novak was buried, and her family and friends mourned what they believed to be a terrible accident. Her home was cleaned out, and her possessions were divvied up or sold, and then everyone went on with their lives. But just a few months later, something else would happen that would have everyone rethinking what they believed about Bernice Novak's death. July 12, 2009. Benji Novak is up north from his Florida home in Rybrook, New York. Like I said earlier, Benji made a very good living organizing and promoting corporate conventions. And on this particular weekend, he had a convention in Rybrook for Amway. Is Amway still a thing? Ugh, pyramid schemes. I live in Utah. This is literally the home of pyramid schemes. Name a multi-level marketing company. 9 times out of 10, they started here in Utah. It's a whole big thing. If you're interested in me telling you why that is, why multi-level marketing is so big here, let me know and I'll make like a little bonus episode about that, because there are a lot of crimes tied up in multi-level marketing. But anyways, Benji's in New York for an Amway convention, and he's staying here at the Hilton Rybrook Hotel, managing this Amway conference that's taking place that weekend. Benji had flown into the Newark airport 2 days before, on July 10th, with his wife Narcy and her daughter May Abad. May was a daughter of Narcy's from a previous relationship. Benji never had any biological children. Amway was Benji's largest client. His company was called Convention Concepts Unlimited, and it was basically in business just to organize Amway conventions. Benji did work with a few other companies, but Amway was by and large his main client. So Benji, Narcy, and her daughter May are in New York with over 1,000 Amway convention guests. Ben had a lot to do to prepare for the conference, so he worked through the night of the 11th into the morning of the 12th. And he finally went to bed around 7:15 the morning of the 12th. He was exhausted. As Benji was going to bed, Narcy was waking up for the day. She got up, she got dressed, and she left the hotel room to go to the cafe and get some breakfast. You can see her here in these surveillance photos, leaving the hotel room and walking into the hallway. She was gone for about 45 minutes, and when she returned to the room, she saw an unbelievable crime had been committed. Narcy opened the hotel room door to see Benji laying on the floor of the hotel room next to the bed. As you can see here, the bed was covered in bright red, very fresh blood. Benji was face down on the floor. His hands were bound behind his back with duct tape, and he was gagged. His legs had been duct taped together around the knees. There was blood everywhere. Narcy ran screaming from the room, and she hadn't even seen Benji's face yet. The police were called and arrived within minutes. Benji was still warm when they got there. They thought he might still be alive, but he had died and there was no reviving him. Police believe Benji could have been alive when Narcy found him, but there was no way to be sure. They could see that he had been bludgeoned, but there was no murder weapon present. And then they turned Benji over. Benji Novak's eyes had been gouged out. Whoever had killed Benji wanted to make sure he had suffered. He was alive when his eyes were taken, and he most likely knew he was going to die. The people killing him wanted to make sure he believed he was going to die. This wasn't just a murder. This was torture. This was personal, and police knew just where to begin looking. Authorities immediately focused on Narcy Novak. To begin with, Narcy had made a terrible mistake, not realizing that hotels track key card usage. After Narcy left the hotel room, no one else had used the key card to enter the room. That means that Narcy Novak had to have let the killers in herself. The police took Narcy to the station and began to question her. As they were doing so, other officers were interviewing everyone in Benji's life. They had very quickly discovered that Benji had hired a porn star to have sex with him some months back, and that initial encounter led to a relationship with that porn star. This story has it all. I'm really surprised no one's made a big budget movie about it. I am. Authorities locate this woman who told them that Benji was planning on leaving his wife so he could be with her. And now they had a motive. The more Narcy talked, the less police believed her. She spoke with police for over 12 hours, telling them that her husband was a, quote, hard person, that he made people angry, and that he was not a nice man. She seemed to be implying that Benji had enemies and plenty of people wanted to kill him. She also told police that Benji had multiple disagreements with city permit officials over Amway conventions. Sometimes cities did not want to give permits for so many people to come to their city at once, and that Benji had made very powerful enemies in government because of this. Narcy also told the police that her husband was a sex addict and, quote, hung out with weird people. Then she brought up the Batman collection, telling investigators that people knew how much Batman memorabilia Benji had and that there were people willing to kill to get at that collection. Maybe they thought that if Benji was dead, Narcy would begin selling off his pieces and they could obtain them that way. It seems a little far-fetched, but if you know people who get into collecting, it can get wild. Narcy even agreed to take a polygraph. You know, I think polygraphs are junk science and no one should take one. It showed indications of deception when she was questioned pertaining to her knowledge of the homicide. The police didn't think they had enough on Narcy to arrest her at the time, so they had to let her go. Police then questioned Narcy's daughter, May, who was 33 years old at the time of Ben's murder. May told the police that her mother was a practitioner of voodoo and that her marriage to Benji was marked by fighting, physical assaults, and accusations of cheating. May told the police of an event that happened in 2002. The police were called to the Novak home for a domestic disturbance. When they got there, they found Benji bound, gagged, and held hostage by his wife, Narcy. There were also several other men there. Benji had been tied up for about 24 hours while these men, at Narcy's direction, cleaned out the house. They took about $370,000 worth of cash and other material goods, but charges were never filed against Narcy because she and Benji convinced the cops that the incident was part of their bizarre sex life. I am not joking, you guys. They told the police that this was a sex game. A few days after this event happened, they filed for divorce, but then they ended up staying together. It was just a very toxic on and off, you know, I'm divorcing you. One would move out, then they'd move back in. The other one would move back out. Who has time for that? Isn't that exhausting? I don't have time or the energy for that crap. May told the police that there were even times when Benji broke her mother's nose. May said after Benji broke her mother's nose one time, he sent her to a plastic surgeon to get it fixed. This sounds like I'm making it up. And when May woke up from the surgery getting her nose fixed, she had giant breast implants that she didn't know she was getting. Went to sleep and just woke up with giant cannons. You can't make this shit up, you guys. And then May confirmed that yes, Benji had been having an affair and that her mother, Narcy, was well aware of it and she was furious. On July 16th, the police searched the Novak home. I want to show you this home. On Zillow, it looks like this. It's gorgeous, right? This is where Benji and Narcy lived in Fort Lauderdale. Looks like a mansion from behind, from the beach. But the street views show it's definitely the nicest house in the neighborhood. The police come to the house and search all 6,000 square feet of this mansion. During the search, they seize paperwork and computers, and they also seize 5 rolls of duct tape. The police already felt that Benji's murder had nothing to do with robbery. His Rolex wasn't even taken. Narcy kept pushing this narrative that it was a rival collector hoping that Benji's death would bring about, you know, the selling of the Batman collection. She even said that Benji had received threats from other collectors. So it's almost like when the police were honest about the fact that they didn't think it was a robbery because Benji still had his Rolex on, Narcy really started to try to get them to believe it had something to do with the Batman collection, because that's more plausible than the fact that he's having an affair. I mean, forensic accountants were brought in to review Benji's estate. His fortune in 2009 was estimated to be between $7 and $10 million. The Batman memorabilia alone was worth over $1 million, and it filled 4 warehouses full of Batman stuff. Weeks went by and then months went by and Narcy went to work. Her number one priority was gaining control over the multi-million dollar estate. She was bound and determined to get everything that once belonged to her murdered husband, and she didn't care who she had to hurt to do it. August 14th, 2009. The police are called to a domestic dispute. When they arrive, they find Narcy and May Novak, mother and daughter, involved in a vicious physical altercation. May is telling the police officers that her mother took a crowbar from the garage and chased her around the property before hitting her with it. The police added this altercation to their growing list of concerns about Narcy Novak, and the investigation continued. It took almost a year. But finally, Janet DeFiore, the district attorney of Westchester County, made a statement to the press. In it, she said, "What transpired on the morning of July 12, 2009 in Ben Novak's hotel room was nothing short of a calculated plot. The killing of Ben Novak was not a spur-of-the-moment crime of passion. It was the end game of considerable planning." Narcy Novak had involved several men to assist her in the murders of not only Benji Novak, but her mother-in-law, Bernice, as well. Police got indictments on Narcy's brother, Cristobal Veliz, Alejandro Garcia, the man who killed Bernice, and Joel Gonzalez. Alejandro and Joel were the two men Narcy led into the hotel room on the morning Benji was killed. They beat Benji to death with dumbbells, with weights, after gouging his eyes out. Now, at first, surprisingly, Narcy didn't give up Alejandro and Joel, but America's Most Wanted featured Benji's murder, and after the episode aired, an anonymous letter was mailed to the Miami Springs Police Department. Police believe the letter came from a family member of Alejandro's or of Joel's who was religious, and they were bothered by what they knew. That person, the anonymous person, is the one that turned the two hired hitmen in. Now, the Hilton where the murder took place had released some photos, as you see here, but no one knew the names of the men until this letter arrived at the Miami police. So they'd had these surveillance photos from the hotel of these two men they suspected were the killers, but nobody had a clue who they were. In June of 2012, Narcy Novak was arrested, along with her brother Cristobal, Alejandro, and Joel. Alejandro turned state's witness and told the police all the details. He was only supposed to hurt Bernice, not kill her. And surprisingly, he said the same about Benji. Apparently, he was just supposed to hurt Benji so badly that he would have to retire. That was why they gouged his eyes out. Narcy believed that Benji being unable to work would open the way for she and her brother Cristobal to take over the business. Narcy actually wanted Alejandro and Joel to cut Benji's testicles off. But as they talked about that plan, they decided that blinding him would be the best way to ensure he was out of business for good. It's absolutely horrific. When you really stop and think about people sitting around and having these conversations, it is so disturbing. I have said this before. It's not surprising to me when you have a bad person, a single actor that does something terrible. But when you get a group of people that are willing to go in on something horrific like this, that's just upsetting to me. It's bothersome to me to know that you can get that many people to agree to do something so awful. As the trials begin, people are shocked to hear that Narcy's defense is going to be to blame her own daughter. I mean, I'm not shocked at this point. Nothing this woman does could shock me, but still. Narcy's lawyer, this man here, talked about how May was the one with the most to gain. Narcy's brother, Cristobal, so that would be May's uncle, even testified against May, saying that she was the actual mastermind behind the plan. These people have absolutely no conscience whatsoever. Then Narcy brought out Benji's porn collection and forced the jury to look at hundreds of photos of a certain kind of pornography that involves amputees. This story, it's just, somebody's got to make a movie. The prosecution brought in Benji's girlfriend, the porn star. Narcy sat in her seat and made gagging motions, as this woman testified. Narcy Novak continued to claim she was innocent. She was facing charges on murder, racketeering, and other offenses. May and her teenaged sons actually went into hiding during the trial because they were afraid Narcy was going to send hitmen to kill them. In 2013, Alejandro Garcia was sentenced to 210 months, which is about 17 years, a light sentence given for his cooperation. He will be deported back to Nicaragua after his sentence is served. Same for Joel. Narcy and her brother Cristobal were each convicted of conspiracy to commit murder, domestic violence, stalking, money laundering, witness tampering, and murder. They were both sentenced to life without parole. Because of the Slayer Rule is a law that says people cannot profit off of murders they commit or crimes they commit. Narcy is not eligible to inherit any money from Benji's estate. She is incarcerated at the Federal Correctional Institution in Tallahassee, and in a not surprising but still sickening twist, she's become BFFs with Ghislaine Maxwell, because of course she has. Disgusting human beings always flock together, right? Prison officials say that Ghislaine was drawn to Narcy because Narcy is seen as kind of a female godfather and she has protection. Ghislaine has protection because she's friends with Narcy. Other inmates in the prison apparently call Narcy Miss Novak out of respect, which just tells you a lot about the people in prison. She had someone bash an 87-year-old woman's brains in. I'm sure there are prisoners that don't like her as well. So what happened to Benji Novak's fortune? For years, this issue languished in the courts. I found an article stating the money was put into a trust and all possible relatives of Benji's were sought to begin divvying out the money. In 2010, a homeless man turned out to be a Novak relative and he was given $100,000, which I find great. I find that amazing. A lot of the money was used up in legal fees, and the last articles I found regarding the money are dated back around 2015, and they're still fighting over the cash then. So if you've got any additional information for our community about what happened to the remaining money, kind of sounds like it's getting eaten up in the courts, please share that in the comments. This is a story that has stayed with me from the first time I heard it. I remember thinking it was one of the most tragic cases and one of the strangest cases I'd ever heard. This family that had everything fell apart. They lost their hotel and they went their separate ways. Then they were killed off by a greedy outsider that they brought into the fold. But they weren't completely blameless. At least Benji wasn't. What's that old saying about lying down with pigs? You might wake up with bacon, but it's more likely you'll just be smelling bad and covered in mud. Sometimes you get your eyes gouged out. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. The podcast is coming in October. I'm very excited about it. Merch is coming in a few weeks. I'm very excited about that. And we've got a lot of really exciting things happening here in our community. If you want to support me, of course, hit the like button and subscribe. But you can also join my Patreon. If you can only do a couple dollars a month, that helps. It helps to keep this channel alive because Lord knows I ain't making any money on YouTube. But in the end, we have a big goal, and it's this. We want to raise money to donate to police departments that have cold case DNA in storage that cannot be tested because there's no money to test it. There are thousands and thousands of sexual assault kits in refrigeration that have never been tested. We want to donate money as often as we can to get those kits tested so they close the case they're associated with, but also get that perpetrator's DNA in the system in case the perpetrator has committed other crimes. It's a big goal. It's a lofty goal. I'm 3 years into this and I am not giving up. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of your day with me. I sure appreciate you. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other. And I will see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.